Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisiscle.com/podcast.
Grab your pitchfork, light your torch, and get ready for inciting a riot. Conventional thinking has been warned, because we're going to gather and we're going to march and we're going to blow its f***ing house down.
Hello, rioters, and welcome back to Inciting a Riot, the podcast. I would be your left-wing dirt-worshipping host, Firelight. Today, I am so excited because I have not one, not two, not three, but five guests here today for a roundtable discussion whose voices you have heard before, but you haven't heard them talking, or at least not all of them, to clarify. Most of these folks you have heard before on the show last fall during the Samhain special, but you heard them singing. These are Renee Collins, Ginger Doss, SJ Tucker, and the band Cheshire Moon. These wonderful, brilliant, amazing, independent musical artists sat down with me in a big round table to discuss all sorts of things. Everything from, you know, the joy of being a musician and the really cool position that holds inside of our community as the bard of our spiritual community. All the way to, you know, sort of the nitty-gritty business stuff about being your own agent, being your own publicist, having to figure out how to do your taxes. And then, of course, we got into a little bit of a discussion about the nature of leadership inside of the community, because a few folks that just wanted to sort of sing and create songs, create music, create entertainment. They thought they were going to be entertainers putting out music. Have suddenly had to contend with the fact that some of them have pretty large followings, and people look to them from time to time whenever stuff is going down in the community. And we talked a little bit about sort of the nature of leadership. And I actually wanted to talk a little bit about that here at the beginning of the show, if you don't mind, for just a quick moment, because I've actually been seeing this come up, this exact same conversation in a number of different areas of social media and you know, just sort of throughout the pagan interwebs lately. This intersection of what is a teacher and what is a leader, you know, and what are these two roles inside of our community? Who are they, and when do they intersect, and when do they divide? It's my understanding that a teacher is a person, no matter the size of their class, whether it's one student or, you know, 500 students, a teacher is a person who sets out to educate others, to teach, right? They have knowledge, they have skills, they have something that they are actively wanting to pass on to other people. You know, if you're, you know, if you ever took a cooking class or an art class or something like that, you had a teacher there who was passing on skills to you. You know, we have all sorts of teachers inside of our community. You have teachers that teach little classes here or there at, you know, pagan bookstores and witchy shops all throughout the country, all throughout the world. Folks that are wanting to pass on their knowledge and skills and research to you. And they don't always have huge followings. They might be, you know, community leaders, maybe, if that's a position that they want. But typically these folks, you know, have maybe some smaller class sizes. Maybe they aren't as well known as other folks. Then you have leaders. Leaders are folks perhaps with larger platforms. you know, and sometimes pretty often leaders become leaders, maybe even without seeking leadership. You can have leadership sort of thrust upon you. I've talked to a couple people, you know, I talked to Frankie at the beginning of this year, who sort of had a position of leadership thrust upon them, you know, almost overnight, gaining a massive social media following. I've talked to other social media sort of stars, breakout stars in the last year, folks that overnight gained, you know, 20,000 followers on a platform, or 50,000 followers, or 100,000 followers. And by dint of the fact that you have a large following, that makes you a leader, right? In some capacity, you know, those folks are following you. Well, who's at the head of a following? It's the leader, right? And there's a different sort of responsibility when it comes to being a leader. A leader's responsibility is to minimize harm, to pass the microphone, to put a spotlight on, you know, the right folks for the right conversations. The leader's responsibility might be to direct you to a teacher. Sometimes, sure, the position of leader and the position of teacher might be found in the same person. They might overlap. There might be, you know, a leader who gives classes, a leader who's willing to teach, a leader who's willing to write, to pass on what they know in some kind of educational capacity. I think that it's important for us as a community to give both leaders and teachers a bit of a break. If a leader is acting in good faith and they pronounce a word wrong, give them a chance to make it right. Give them the opportunity to also learn, because they're probably not teachers. They're, you know, there's a lot of folks that are leaders that are sort of learning along with everybody else. I know, I feel like I'm one of those people. You know, by the same token, you know, give teachers a break. Not every teacher wants to be in a position of leadership. Not every teacher wants to put themselves forward and be this, you know, community leader. Not everybody wants that position, and trying to force people into that position can lead to anxiety and all sorts of, you know, no fun kinds of feelings. So I just kind of wanted to have a little bit of that conversation here, you know, and talk about sort of that dual role of the teacher leader and the teacher and the leader in our community. If you have any thoughts on this, ways to contact me are going to be at the end of the show. I'm going to shut up now and turn the microphone over to these amazing musicians. Well, good morning and welcome to Inciting a Riot. I am so excited because we have today a round table of some very familiar voices. I don't want to say very familiar faces because you might not have seen many of these folks before, but you have definitely, if you've listened to the show for a while, heard their voices. The folks that I am talking to today are most all of the musicians that were featured on my Samhain special last year in 2020, year of pandemic, year of we were all locked down and sort of rediscovering a love for the arts. And today, I thought it would be a really important and fun time to have a conversation with independent artists who are making up our pagan musical sphere, what we listen to, and sort of, you know, the voices that are next to us while we worship. Those are not people that we hear much from, except for when they're singing. So I think it's an interesting conversation to hear both about the personal and business side of pagan music, which is something I don't think we hear enough about. So in order of the folks on my screen, we'll go clockwise here. We'll start at the top. Good morning, Cheshire Moon. How are you?
We are well this morning. It's good to see you, Firelight.
Yeah, good morning. Good morning. For folks who haven't actually seen you at one of the Pagan Pride of events that you go to, that you've attended, or any of your concerts, I know you did a lot of concerts last year during lockdown. You guys were staying busy. Introduce yourselves for listeners that haven't heard you before.
My name is Lizzie. This is my husband, Eric. Hello. And we do make up Cheshire Moon. It's part folk, part fanciful, you know, retellings of familiar and less familiar stories, and bringing older mythos into a modern day perspective. And it's
we have firmly embraced the term myth punk.
It is true. It is true.
That's when asked to describe our music, that's the first word that generally comes out of my mouth. Yeah. Someone is going, yes.
We owe a great
yeah, I discovered, I first heard you guys several years ago at Chicago's Pagan Pride, and you were doing this song about Disney princesses, I think.
Yes, that we were doing a retelling of Rapunzel, where she doesn't wait to get rescued. She's like, all right, I'm out of here.
I instantly became very, very obsessed with you all and have been very obsessed ever since. So I'm so glad that you all are here today.
There's a trilogy of songs, actually. There's Snow White, Red Road, where it isn't because she's beautiful, it's because she can do magic. That's why the queen hates her.
Love it.
And Sleep No More, which
is about Sleeping Beauty, also who is just like, cursed my tail end. Like, I'm using this. I have been touched by magic and I'm going to use it, darn it. And she does. And then there's, you know, Rapunzel refusing to waiting to be rescued. She's like, yeah, this hair is useful. It's rope. I'm getting down. I'm gone.
Oh, I love it so much. Next person on my screen here is Ginger Doss. Ginger was a new artist for me last year. And again, I'm very broken record here, but very, very obsessed with your music and your work and your platform. So welcome, Ginger.
Thank you so much, Firelight. It's a joy to be here, and especially with all these other wonderful artists that I'm also fans of. I've been doing this for a long time. I started out in a band called Velvet Hammer a long time ago that some people know. And then we morphed into a band called Dream Tribe. And then after that, I was in a duo for a while called GB Mojo, and been traveling around. And then finally, it just kind of whittled down to me. And I've got 5 albums out now, and I'm working on the 5th and releasing it as singles right now. My music is spirit-led, inspired by my own journey. And that is multifaceted and comes in many forms. And so you can be sure that whatever you hear from me is going to be a part of my own journey, a part of my own realization and revelation. And I'm
going to be real honest here. I listen to all of you, and I listen to all of you in at different times and to put me in different moods. Ginger is the only pagan artist on my workout playlist. There is nothing that gets you in the mood more to go do some squats and heavy lifting than some Ginger Doss. Like, man, you do some rockin' tracks, man. It's awesome. It's awesome.
What a great review.
Woo! Man, you make my butt hurt. the next artist on my screen is probably not a stranger to most of you. She's been on the show before. And I did a show with her last year. We did a concert together, a pseudo concert. It's a poetry reading in the voice of Ms. S.J. Tucker, the first woman of pagan music herself. Hello, and welcome back to Inciting a Riot.
Thank you, Firelight, and good morning. I'm so happy that you decided that what you wanted for your birthday was to bring us all together for purely selfish reasons. If you were to fuse, I'm trying to think of a short elevator speech for this morning that I've never tried before. Jessica Hoop and the voice of Laura at the campfire, you would find me in the middle in my pirate hat and my bells, trying the best I can to be what people need in that moment musically for community, for our times, for times past, for stories we know and stories we don't know. And in the before times, I traveled around primarily to community events, pagan festivals, and little malleable, rentable concert spaces that you could make into your own and bring your own crowd into and do house concerts. And also taught myself how to do online shows well before the pandemic, because I was I was coming into motherhood and said, okay, I got to figure out how to keep in touch with my people. I'm also learning how to keep this little person alive. And then continuing to hopefully help other artists figure out how to do online shows. Once things got a little intense last year. And when I am out on the road, I also get to be part of a witchy fairy folk band called Tricky Pixie. And we had some shows last year, but they were taken away from us, just like they were taken away from everybody else. And every face that is part of this panel, every voice that is speaking to y'all today, we all would have seen each other at some point. We were all supposed to be at one event or another together last year, and it did not happen. So this is a beautiful full circle this morning that I see before me.
The next person on my screen is another new voice to me, at least as of last year. Renee Collins, welcome to Inciting a Riot.
Thank you, Firelight. It's a pleasure to be in the company of great wisdom and talent. I'm just tickled pink this morning to be here. I guess I just started doing the professional music performing things from a young age of probably 10, with music and then theater and all this kind of good stuff. Really delved into writing music on spirituality and my own magical practices. But did but never had a hard time finding out where I fit. So in the industry, as you probably might have experienced, oh wow, Renee, it's really good stuff. We don't know where to put you kind of thing. That's what I would get all the time at the industry kind of stuff. And I thought, okay. And then I as luck would have it, I ended up moving to back to California, to here in Los Angeles, and I began to spend time with Orion Foxwood and Patrick McCollum, and then Starhawk became a friend of the family, would come here and play with my kids here in the house. And then I discovered Pantheacon, and I thought, oh, there's my people. There's my people. And I want to thank SJ for introducing me to your radio station. That was and we did Hexenfest together, which was another highlight from last year, a blessing from last year. So thank you, SJ, and
So
happy to
happy
be
you're here,
here.
brother.
Well, thank you all so much for being here. Each of you has inspired me in so many ways, some of you for many years, some of you for many months. But each of you contributes something invaluable to the pagan community. And before the show, officially started, some of you were using the term bard, and sort of that position of musician as leader, as culture creator, as storyteller. So I guess my first question to each of you, and you can either raise your hand or just chime in, but my first question to you all is, what position do you see the pagan musician taking up inside of the community? Go ahead, Cheshire. Lizzie.
More than anything, it's culture creation, but it's also culture cultivation. It's about creating a space where the culture can grow, and it's not just art reflecting life, it's art allowing life to be. And so we sort of create that channel to, bring people in, bring people together to allow that exchange of ideas, that sharing of experience, and that forward and circular motion of everyone coming together and just being together. The music is what brings people together, and we facilitate that cultivation and that growth.
I love that. Renee, it looks like you had something to say.
Oh, did you want to go, SJ?
No, go ahead. Go ahead,
Oh,
Renee.
Ginger? Okay. Yeah, I also see it as the mouthpiece of the spirit, or mouthpiece of the planetary spirit, particularly ancestral claims, because these were the people that would impart wisdom to everyday an everyday application through their song, through their music, and their ability to tap intuition into the spirits or spirit, whatever system that you know people belong to. And this imparting of wisdom would lead people in right action, and also in terms of social justice, these bards would be at the forefront of singing of what is right and what is not right, and what is to bring things into balance and into whole, and to bring things from the past, from the ancestry, to the present, so that we can understand and move forward. Yeah. So that's what I think. That's one of the things I want to add to it as well.
Yeah. Ginger.
Yeah, that was beautiful. Voice of the Spirit. You know, if you look back at every path there is, music is such an important part of spiritual expression. You can't go to any church service without the hymns being the focal part. And if you look at all the different paths, expression has not always been easy for people in general. And for me, especially using myself as like the analogy here, growing up, I felt very different and very apart from the world around me. And the best way for me to express myself was through my music. And as I started writing at a very early age, I started saying what I needed to say, and I could get it out, and it was a safe space. And I think as we are coming into this new age, the musicians are able to express the deepest part of spirit, the deepest part of our practice. We can put into music and into lyric what could otherwise not be really expressed in words, allowing us to gather in groups and sing together and celebrate together with rhythm and melody. And it lifts us up to another place. It allows our spiritual practice to become something so much more. And it joins us together in that love of the sound. And it's just an integral part of any path. And it's a beautiful place to be as a creator in that spectrum. I don't know, I just kind of rambled there. So I hope that
No, not at all.
It was gorgeous. Spot on.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I want to ask for anyone who wants to jump in. You know, it's easy to ask what you like about being a musician. You know, it's easy to ask a creative person what you like about being a creative person. But I want to talk about a side of independent artistry, because all of you, you know, when the world shuts down, you don't have a contract with a recording company where you can, you know, go and do a stint on The Voice and do that social distance, or go and, you know, find other avenues to, you know, make this insane money, like you see some musicians have the option of. So I want to ask about the business side of independent artistry, and some of that sticky part. What is the most difficult thing about being all things to yourself? You're your own manager, you're your own PR person, you're your own accountant. SJ, why don't you go ahead and kick it off, and then anyone else can just jump in.
Self-criticism. Self-criticism. I am very grateful that there is no one else in the world who is as mean to me as I am in my own head from time to time. But this is what we choose. This is the life we choose. This is the work that we choose. And this ties in with your previous question, Firelight, which I would like to revisit for just a few seconds here, because we get to be healers. We get to be, if we choose it, if we open up, potentially, possibly, I'm not saying we are every single time we play a show, a channel for something that somebody who was there might need in that moment, in that night, during that experience. And it's a ton of responsibility on top of having to do all the self-promotion, all the social media management, all the time management, all the recording, all the, you know, the advertising, all the doing the books and making sure that you have a budget to keep living this life. And so it's, it could feel a little scary if you let it get to you to think, to keep in mind that concerts change people's lives all the time. People don't go to concerts without a certain level of expectation to come away changed, to come away different than who they were before. And so we have learned how to adapt that to make that magic come through onto a screen the best that we can. But the voice, it's the internal critics for me personally, and this may not apply to anyone but me, and I recognize that, that are the hardest thing to deal with. Is if I could just cut myself a little more slack, I might be further along on some of these goals. But even that statement is coming from an internal critic. So you just gotta give them a lollipop and get them to hush sometimes. And I don't always manage it. I do not always manage it, but I do my best.
Just as an aside to something that you said there, right? Having been that person in the audience, and both having seen Ginger and being Sush, who needed something going into a show. And Ginger and I have talked about this a little bit. She knows the effect that I have after every Ginger show that I've ever seen. I walk out and I'm wide open. I am just suddenly I'm getting everything from the world. I have the same effect from you. It's so important that communication and that just feeling of pulling you into these worlds for a little while. It's just glorious. But I had to say that. I just,
yeah.
Don't mind the fangirl over here.
Yeah. moment of fanboy rant. I do that a lot.
Well, and having fans, I'm sure, is a very fun part of being of being an artist, of being out there publicly. But I'm curious, you know, to draw it back to the business side of things and sort of the unsavory bit. You know, SJ brought up a good point that you have to become your own worst critic, and I think maybe the good and bad part is then you have to listen to that critic as well, because there's really nobody else telling you whether or not a song should be on an album. You know, there's nobody else telling you whether or not you should do that interview, or whether you should, you know, whether that's the poem you should include in that book. I'm sorry, am I talking about myself? But you know, when you're your own everything, you know, you have all those little voices that most people get to turn off and you don't. And sometimes you have to take their advice. So what's the best advice that your worst internal voice has given you?
Oh boy.
I love that question, Firelight. I love that. Wow, man. That is a good
one. My worst internal voice doesn't give me good advice.
Oh, come on.
The best advice that I can give myself is to trust my heart and soul, trust my process. Learning to trust has been the biggest gift of this process, because it's very, very difficult to put your babies out into the world and go, oh my God, I hope they like them, you know? And I had to realize a long time ago that you have to love them yourself enough to put them out there, to know I've done what I can do and I've done my best. And I know that if I love it, there's got to be at least one other person out there that's going to love it. And I have to just trust that what comes to me from spirit is going to be received. Not everyone's going to like it, and that's just the way of the world. You know, the most beautiful art in the world, there's always going to be a critic. And I just have to learn that nobody else does Ginger Doss. Nobody else does Cheshire or S.J. Tucker or Renee. Nobody does that, and we have to do that. The world needs us. So my inner critic you know, when they're starting to say, it's not good enough, it's not worthy, it's that voice is a liar every time for each one of us, for you, Firelight, for everybody. We have to trust that we are doing what we are here to do, and that is good. It is good. It is part of the ever-expanding universe, and we are a part of that. And to allow that to be is the greatest gift that we have. And so we just need to tell our worst critic to sit down and shut up. It's good that we have that contrast. We need that contrast, you know, to rise above it, you know, to learn that we are so much more than that. And my spiritual studies are my tool for everything. Like without those, I would not be here. I would be in a puddle in the corner because it is so overwhelming and so hard. And there's plenty of times where I have to go into the fetal position and just cry it out. But yeah, what we do is what we're here to do. And that is part of the divine flow of everything. It's so important. Yeah.
Anybody else?
You know what else? You know what else?
I was going to say, anybody else have a take on...
I'll tell you what else I hate about this part of this business, because I know that Ginger Doss is dealing with this right now too. I hate doing my taxes, friends. but I handle it. I wrestle that beast to the ground every single year, and it is my privilege to do so. Okay.
But anybody else on the idea of, you know, that dark side of you know, your psyche giving you sometimes good advice that we don't like to give them credit for, but we're like, no, that was a good, you got me there.
Well, I don't know. Comparison was the right ways of comparison, you know, because oftentimes, you know, growing up, I would often sort of seek what's my sound. That was the big thing for me, because, you know, I wanted to sound like this guy, or sound like that guy, or this girl, or whatever. And understanding that my voice was saying, Renee, you know, you think too much. You think too much, Renee. Just shut up and just do the music. Oh, but I gotta do this, gotta do that. No, you don't. But he said, no, you don't. Just do it. You know, just, you're fine. But it's so old, I'm so right. Yeah, it's okay. It's all right.
There is such a thing as trying too hard.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Sometimes that voice tells you to just sit down and let it be.
Just go. Yeah. Because what you know, when I grew up, there was a lot of expectation, and you know, certain, you know, growing up as a kid, I was kind of a little prodigy. Everybody, oh, you're going to be the next Michael Jackson, the next Ben Vereen, whatever. And so all this stuff. Oh my God, I got to be this person, and that's what I had to contend with growing up, you know, and then going into my 20s and trying to figure all that out and sometimes I had mentors, sometimes I didn't have mentors, you know. But that also serves the way that I express myself and that impact that I have on my crowd, because I'm free. And so I'm expressing my freedom. And so that voice, that little dark voice, is just kind of nudging me in the corner, you know, to make sure that I'm on the straight and narrow, basically. So I hope that answers that.
I like that. I think, you know, I think that sometimes we don't want to admit that there are things about ourselves that sometimes, I mean, I think that that's the benefit of something like, you know, the word shadow work is a very overused term, I think, right now. Mm-hmm. I don't think that people, I think it's along the terms of gaslighting. I think it's one of those terms that a lot of people use to sound fun and buzzy, but I don't think a lot of people know the meaning of.
Right.
But it is akin to shadow work, in which you do kind of have to listen and process through some of the darker pieces of yourself. And every now and then when you're doing that, you come across something that's like, oh, is that harmful, or was that just something that's true about myself that I didn't want to face? And I think sometimes it's in that space when listening to that maybe shadow side of yourself can be helpful. You might listen to the part of yourself that says, oh God, you're such an asshole. But are you such an asshole, or are you too prideful to admit when you're wrong sometimes? And that's, I just know for me, that's something, I've had to grow up with this show. I was very, very young when the show started. We talked a little bit before the show started about other people that write in that are like, oh, I'm getting married and I listened to you when I was a baby. But, I've grown up on this show and, become an adult person on this show. And there's times when I have to be like, oh, yeah, I was a dick. And that's what serves to make what you put out into the world better, I think, sometimes.
Proud of you for that. We are all of us writers, musicians, all of us together in this space, in this audio visual space that we're sharing this morning, really good at taking poop and turning it into art, whether it's poop that we discovered was of us, or poop that we see happening out in the world and turned it into art. And then that internal critic struggle can sometimes come when you're like, but did I make the poop pretty enough? Is it a better enough thing than it was when I started? And somebody told me a long time ago, you can only get a blade so sharp. And I'm sorry that I don't know to whom to attribute that. But I have to remind myself that's one of my affirmations, is you can only get a blade so sharp.
And yeah. I've learned, because during the pandemic, I discovered the show Forged in Fire. And if you keep going on trying to sharpen that blade, eventually you will break it.
Yeah.
You will make it so brittle, you will break it.
It's really good. That's why in cases, it's good to have people around you that you trust, because one of the things that I was so insecure with my first release, because I've done CDs before with the band, but not with myself, that I would just keep going on and on. Well, is that just sharpening of the blade? I just wouldn't stop doing it. Finally, one of my producers says, it's fine. Just be finished with the song, it's fine. And I was like, oh yeah.
Get out of there. Get out of there. Go take a break.
What's going on?
When we made our first album, I had a lot more experience. I'd been making music since I was about 16. And I was in my, in my 50s at that point when she and I, and the first sessions, she went back, she listened to the vocals, and she wanted to throw it all away because she thought it was awful.
I started crying.
Yeah.
I was so upset.
I'm like, no, you don't understand. First of all, with a couple exceptions of people who I know, a guy who will harmonize with himself in his car. most people hate the sound of their own recorded voice, because it sounds different than you hear it. You hear it filtered through this, and when you're hearing from something, it sounds different. And second, not every line is exactly on the beat. Good. You need to flow, you need to move with it. And it took a couple days to get her to be able to hear that and understand that and not go back and redo the entire vocals for the entire album. But it was it was this voice of going, that's not right. And it's like, no, it is. You got to understand that also sometimes the imperfections is what makes it cool. That little extra.
Thank you for saying that, Eric.
Quite drift into right. So you're a little sharp, a little flat, gives it that feel that you really want.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, that was something that I noticed too. It's like, when in front of a microphone, you're half in, you're half out. Something else is doing the work. Mm-hmm. And it does show up organically through those little tiny modulations within the vocals. That's what's most interesting to the listener, At least
that may be where the magic is. That may be where the magic is, right, Renee? Yeah.
Yes.
Because we can't predict it. We can't predict when it will come through and what it will sound like.
Right, exactly.
I have to tell myself so often to remember the magic when I'm getting real self-critical on stage or in the studio, because if I can remember that I'm bringing magic to this situation as a performer, then I'm less likely to get in my own way. Because yeah. if I stay in like priestess headspace, then I have a job to do, and whatever comes is going to be what people need. And back to what Ginger has said, and which we've all echoed, you just have to trust at that point.
Quick show of hands, who is doing music full-time? Is this your full-time job? This is your only source of income? Okay, so we've got two.
Oh no, I have like three other jobs that's all full-time. So.
He says three and holds up five. His subconscious gave him away. He's like, I've got three.
I've got three.
How many fingers am I holding up?
As many as it takes.
Wait a minute. Right. One, yes. Two, three.
Whatever it takes.
Yeah. Better question, I think. Who thinks of themselves as a musician first?
No. Yeah.
Everybody. Okay. Mm-hmm. How do you, in your mind, and in your life, make space for the fact that you still have to eat? You have to pay your bills. You have to do all that. And because none of us are making Christina Aguilera money on our pagan audience, we have to go out into the world and work. How do you make space for that fear of I'm losing being an artist? Oh shit, I'm only gonna have like 2 hours to do something for myself like this month. I've scheduled this month, and between my three jobs, I've got, I'm gotta make space to record or write or feel creative. I personally speaking, I can't just be like, okay, I've got this amount of time. I need a time of transition to decompress from the other stuff. I need time to kind of just veg. I need to get my brain back in a state that it wants to be creative, that it has an idea. But what do you all do? How do you keep yourself in that musician first mindset?
I can
go ahead, Lizzie.
As somebody who has, you know, as somebody who is an accountant in my day job, you don't
now is this an accountant or is this a TikTok accountant?
No, I'm an actual accountant. I am in finance. This is what I do every day. It is what I do for money.
I just didn't know if there were like some 6-inch stilettos somewhere and we were an accountant.
There's that too. But that's not what I do for a paycheck. I could discount that, but I'm just saying. As somebody who is an accountant, it's strange how spirit speaks and when. And what you need to do more than anything else is just be ready. And I have a book.
I get emails in the middle of the day saying, here's a complete song. I wrote this in between, you know, dealing with things at my desk.
In between meetings, you know, all of a sudden, you know, during a meeting, I will have a thought and I have a book that I write everything down in. It doesn't matter that if in the moment it's fantastic, I look back at it later and it's garbage. I don't care. It came out. It came to me. It came out. It was a worthy thing. And whether it's, you know, quote worthy later, it doesn't matter. It goes in the book. And you allow yourself to be ready for when those moments strike, because they'll strike when you're driving. That's real fun. When I have to ask, you know, Eric to hold up my phone to my face so that I can, you know, use the voice recorder while I'm driving. That's a lot of fun. But it's really not a matter of scheduling that, because you really can't. You can't, there's no good way to control that. There's no good way to just keep that door shut until you're ready and then open it. So you just give yourself the tools on the side to be able to capture those moments, to be able to capture those ideas when they come, and you keep them in a place where you can go back to them when you do have time.
And what I do is, you can see here, there's a rack of instruments. There's another rack of instruments over here. Our living room is right here. And there's this room that I can simply walk into whenever I want. All my instruments are out. I got a humidifier in the winter and everything else, or everything's taken care of. Nothing lives in its cases. So I can sit down and go, I want the mandocello right now. Tune, tune, go. And other than this year, when we've kind of taken a break so far this year, I've not been playing much at all, which is weird for me. But I make a point of picking up an instrument every day just to make sure that that emotion, that movement keeps flowing and keeps going. It stays fluid. It doesn't, you know,
stagnate.
Yeah. Stagnate. That's the word I was looking for. And so it's just, it's all of our gears right here. Always. When we bought this house, our first thing is that the music room has to be on the same level as the car.
Because we are past an age where we are comfortable taking half a dozen pieces of equipment up and down a full flight of stairs every single time we come home.
We are all of an age now. Yes.
It's easy to get to. It makes it easy to sit down and go, okay, I gotta let something happen here.
Anyone else on the subject of being a musician first? Yeah,
I use the only way that I can really make it work is I use cycles of whether based upon the moon or based upon the day or within the year. So I'm also a Qigong teacher. So I'm also Taoist training and as well. And what's been really helpful for me is that there are specific times in the day where your life force is at a particular pitch and it matches what's happening with your body. And so at certain points during the day, I allow that process to happen and then I sort of fit into the groove of the day. So if I'm going to be creative, say between 3 to 5, because that's the best time because it represents the kidney energy system or the water element, for energy, for feeling and emotion, I'm just going to sort of sit in there, you know. I use the seasons. So I just rely on the momentum of the spring and sort of cast it in there and allow the creative aspect to open up that way. And then when I use these cycles, then I'm able to fit all the stuff in because I'm also teaching music to children. I teach 14 classes a week to kids. And then I'm teaching Qigong three times a week. And I have a family. I've got a wife and two kids and a dog and a cat. So it's a lot. So, and plus the music and everything else. So if I fit into a cycle, that seems to work pretty well for me. But also I do the same thing with Treasure does. I have instead of a notebook, I have a recorder and I'll be driving. And it always happens like the spring is the best time. Bang, 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 bang. Oh, hit the recorder. And then I'm like, sing that melody in there. Okay, good. Hit da 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 da. Oh, another one. Stop the guard. Hit da da da. Sing this in. So a piece of song together that way. So you have to be, it's what SJ was talking about earlier. It's like, it's that in-between world. You know, you can't force it. You can't. But you have to sort of be in a receptive space for that flow, for those ideas to come in. You put them in the notebook and then you revisit them later and then see what you do with them. So that's what I do. I just stick with cycles.
Deadlines are awesome. I didn't know that. I didn't know that until 6 years ago. Having a deadline really, really was useful to me. And I was scared to death, but signed up with a friend to be part of a group of songwriters who would take a prompt and write something, each one of us. And it didn't even have to be good, but we had to write a song that was at least 2 minutes long once a week to a prompt that we didn't know what it was going to be until that Monday. And we had to turn it in by Sunday night at the stroke of 12, at the stroke of midnight. And I was so scared, but I was like, I'm going to do this anyway. And y'all, I participated in that several years since then as well. And I've got more songs now finished that I actually like. There are some that I don't like, but I've got more songs than I know what to do with. Like, I can't even remember some of the ones that I've written in the past 3 years. Mm-hmm. And I was prolific before then. I wrote a lot of songs before then. So now I'm going back and getting reacquainted with these new little people that came out of my head that I haven't really had time to sit with because the deadlines were coming so fast. And I'm also in my momsition aspect. I've mentioned that I have a kiddo now. I would not be okay, straight up. I would not be okay if I did not have a very, very supportive co-parent, partner, husband, and his parents right here on the property with me. So while we have all been on lockdown, and I had all of our travel plans just completely vanish because of COVID, so that we could stay safe and getting to stay home with my son, which I had not honestly expected to do. That was an unexpected gift that I also didn't necessarily know how to adjust into. I would not be okay if I did not have this incredible family support, because they allow me to have a window of time every single day. And that's when I get to work. I get to go work on music. I get to take a walk. I get to take a nap, just whatever I need to fit, but I have to fit it into that window, because mama, 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 mama coming across the yard is going to happen at some point. And I have to switch. Like, I have to shift gears right then. And that's when I'm done for the day, until he goes to bed. And it's so fast. And like, you have to make so many split decisions. And I didn't know how much fun that could be. There's fun days, there's not fun days, obviously. And all of us who are caretakers of any other human know what this is like. Firelight has come into his uncle aspect, I know, as well. So we all know how this works in some form. There are some days that are not fun, but it's been the most rewarding to find what my new time management looks like with respect to parenting and to the pandemic and to having all the musician related jobs to do besides the fun stuff, which is recording and writing and performing.
SJ, I want to ask you, you're the only person here full-time musician. You're the only one whose hand stayed up at the end there. So I want to talk to you first about fear. I want to talk to you about the fear of what if it all goes away? what if you wake up tomorrow and just, you know, the pagan community is very, very small. We're real small. And the pagans who buy pagan music have to be even smaller than that. So what does that feel like? What is that process that you have? What is the fear, and what keeps you moving through it? What keeps you creating? What keeps you motivated to make through the fear of, well, what if I wake up tomorrow and there's no more audience? There's no more there.
There's a conversation that I had with my buddy, Ben Dobbins, who is a filmmaker and also a community nexus point in their own right, several years ago. And I mention it in almost every interview because it has stuck with me so hard, that whenever things get really bad, those of us who still have community that we can depend on will be the ones who are okay. And I have seen that writ large over the past 14 months or so. And I have the ultimate fear, the ultimate phrasing of the worst possible fear that I could ever have and that I sit with every day is, what if I let everybody down? Like, that's the big fear. That's the bit, like, I'm trying not to choke up just talking about it, because it is so real. What if I do something so terrible that nobody loves me anymore? And what if I let everybody down as a performer, as a community member, you know? And so putting the name on it doesn't necessarily make it any smaller, but at least it's a face, you know? And the way that I have been moving through that this time around I don't consider myself, I do not believe that I am an innovator. I do not believe that I'm an influencer. But whenever the doubt comes in big, big ways, along with the fear, there's always a message that comes through from another human being somewhere on this planet. Anytime I have a really, really terrible thought along the lines of maybe I just need to stop, which has not happened in a really long time, thankfully, it's always immediately, the minute that thought comes into my head, I get a message from somebody. It's an email, it's a phone call, it's face to face, it's a comment, something. It's one of the babies on TikTok calling me Bard Mom out of nowhere. It's always along the lines of, please, please don't stop. We need you. Please don't ever stop singing. Please don't ever stop what you're doing. And after a certain number of times when that exact back and forth happened, where I had the doubt and that message came through and the wind just kicked up as I'm talking about this, y'all, I'm sitting on my front porch. That was spooky as hell. That was spooky as hell. After that had happened a few times, I was like, okay, all right. Okay. I won't stop. I'm listening. Thank you for bringing the message so clearly to me.
And the wind was bringing that too, because you have a room yes! full of people right See? Now who yeah. are sending you that love saying, That's right. don't you dare.
I know. We I know. All get to do it. We all get to do that for each other today, because yeah. Firelight is such a prince to let us come together.
Yeah. For everybody else though, I want to ask about fear as well, but the fear that nobody is listening, the fear that, you know, I know, speaking very, very personally, you know, the fear that you're just continuing to yap into a microphone, the fear that you're just, you know, doing this in your side room, the fear that you're just putting, you're going to continue just putting this out there because this is all that you know how to do. This is just what you have to do. You're here to do this into this microphone. But that it's just, there's no upward movement. There's no going somewhere. I think that social media teaches us that like there is a height of success that we are all supposed to be reaching, especially as, again, social media has made so many different kinds of obscure makers into big, big names with big, big careers and big, big houses and big, big paychecks that follow that. And, but I want to ask, do you all see that? Do you internalize it? Or I don't know. Sometimes I feel very lucky that I am not young now and participating in that kind of social media. I mean, the kind of social media that I had when I was very young was the kind of Facebook where you had to be a college student to be on it. And only other college students at your campus could talk to you. Like it was a very different kind of social media. And there wasn't all of this comparison and this instant fame and follower counts and things like that. So talk to me about that fear that nobody's listening, that career's not progressing, that you're going to have to be an accountant forever, et cetera, et cetera. Go ahead, Lizzie.
That's not why you do it. Mm. You don't do it for the fame. You don't do it for that gratification. You do it because the message needs to be out there. You do it because the stories need to be out there. And, you know, Vincent van Gogh, nobody liked him when he was alive. And now, today, he is one of the most iconic visual art figures that has ever lived. And that's the thing, is that you don't do it for the gratification. This is a vocation. It is not so much an occupation, it is a vocation. It's something you do because it is larger than one person. You know, the message is larger, the music is larger, you know, what excuse me, what we put out into the universe is larger than ourselves, and that is why you do it. You know, you get a career out of it, fantastic. You get a big house out of it, fantastic. That's not why though. And when you make that, when you put that monetary weight onto it, it takes on a different dimension. It takes on a different manifestation that is not always healthy. And you can't gauge what you put out into the world by how much money you're going to make on it, because that's not art at that point. It's you let the art be what it's going to be. You do put it out into the world because even if you don't know about it, somebody somewhere is going to get something from it. And that is important. That is vital. And that is a big chunk of the reason why we do what we do.
I many years ago, I was working temp in an accountant's firm, and one of the guys there asked me why I wasted my time writing songs. That was his exact phrasing. Why do you waste your time writing songs? I said, because nobody remembers the name of Beethoven's accountant.
Right.
And he started to go, well, who? And then thought better, because no, he said, if I ask him who Beethoven's accountant is, he'll make fun of me some more. I'm right. Just gonna walk away.
Yeah, I dare you to ask. I dare you to ask that.
Steal it. Feel free. I'm proud of it. Take it. You know, I make music because I have no choice. I've never had a choice. I quit for 17 years. I mean, I still played in my bedroom occasionally, but I quit because those voices told me that I wasn't any good. And also, I mean, I had, you know, kids and a job and everything else. And I just gave up. And about the time that I 2000, you know, I got back into it, and I'm never looking back again. I'm never going to do that to myself again.
I'm really glad you did, because I wouldn't have met you if you had.
Yeah, no, it was. I'd forgotten how much I needed. I had forgotten how necessary it was to my existence. And, you know, I work a full-time job. I've been where I'm at for 25 years now. And so that pays my bills. You know, Cheshire Moon and Eric Solo and everything. It's never made any money. Not really. But that's not why I do it. That's not why an artist is compelled to do what they do. It is just something in their soul, in the core of their being, that it is necessary to tell these stories, to sing these songs, to write this poetry, to dance in front of people, to sit down and you know, write novels. It's because it is a necessity for who you are. And for those of us who have that necessity, you know, and I'm a firm believer that as an artist, you don't owe anybody anything. Nothing. You owe yourself to do your art in as honest and not, it doesn't need to be true. I always have, there's a difference between true and truth. But in as honest a way as you possibly can.
You owe authenticity, and that is it.
And that's all you owe anybody else, is to make your art as best as you possibly can. And I think that if you have the slightest leaning toward that, that you have to do it. It's important. It's you know, my kids, my old son plays guitar, and he has no real interest in ever doing anything with it. My youngest son is in, I've lost count, 3 or 4 bands right now.
Five total
right now. He's insane. He's just, there's this music that is just pouring out of him constantly. And I look at him, I go, yes, one of my kids gets it, absolutely. And my daughter, who, you know, wants to be a teacher, and that's a whole different drive, you know, but she's looking at me, go, yeah, she's heard me do this rant before. It is such an important thing for us to be able to do what we do on whatever level we can.
Anyone else on the idea? Yeah, go ahead, Renee.
So there, for me, it was two things. I love doing what I do. I would get up 5 in the morning and do this. It's something that you love to do. And the other thing is, well, are you going to be living out in the gutter, you know? And that, so going into this business, it's a real fear. That is a real fear. It's different now than when I was coming up, because there wasn't, you know, there was this idea that you either, if you were a musician or an artist, you're either really, really broke and you were just really struggling, or you were super rich. There was no in between. And that was the message that was being conveyed when I was growing up. So that puts a lot of pressure on that. Well, my God, and if nobody hears me, then the feelings of depression and sadness, they take over. And that's something that I had to wrestle with, especially through my 20s, and a little bit of my 30s. So I had to change my mind about it, because it is about doing what you love. But I had to say, do I really need the expensive house with the cars that I'm being told that's what it means to be? I mean, and those people are miserable. You know what I mean? They're miserable. So what is it? Oh, if I can just allow the music that I write to be solvent, if I can create a business that pays for itself with a little bit of, you know, savings along the way, that's fine. That's good. You know, and that actually calmed my fear down quite a bit, because there's no pressure of extremes of having to say, well, either you're going to be in the gutter or you got to be in the big house. Those are the only ways, which is the dark side of the force loop, you know?
So we are, I want to be respectful of everybody's time. This hour and a half has gone by immensely faster than I thought it was going to, which is good. There's a question that I wanted to get to, that I want to make sure that we hear from everyone on, and it's about the place of the musician in society and culture. And, I think they were called the Dixie Chicks, now called the Chicks. But I think of their era of the song Not Ready to Make Nice, when, they criticized then President George W. Bush. The country community came out in force. There were burning of CDs, which was hilarious, because then you had to buy the CD to burn the CD. So it's like, I've already got your money, but okay. Like, I don't know what point you thought you were making, but this is fine. So by the way, if you would like to ever make a statement about me, feel free to buy a copy of my book and burn it. I'm fine with that. Buy several copies, burn them, drown them. I'm fine with it. Just buy as many copies of my book to destroy as you want. But anyways, I digress. But I want to ask, because pre-show, we were talking sort of about the evolving conversation, not only happening in the culture at large, but in the pagan community specifically in the last year. Very often when we talk about BNPs, our big name pagans, our pagan celebrities, if there are any, which is weird because we're a spiritual group, and it's weird to think about a spiritual group having celebrities, but whatever, we do, and it's a fact of life. People seem really surprised. People don't seem surprised when authors have opinions about things, when teachers have opinions about things, even when shop owners have opinions about things at times. Though I will say shop owners tend to keep pretty mum about politics or cultural issues, because they tend to be a little bit more tied to the commerce aspect of it. And I think that's probably where we'll go here. But when there is uncomfortable discourse happening in the pagan community, how much pressure do you feel to speak up? And because I want to be able to get everybody to talk about this, and we are so limited on time, I also want to ask, authers might feel a little bit more comfortable to speak up because they're given an advance on royalties most of the time. So in essence, an author doesn't necessarily need to worry about not making money. Their book is already out there. They've been paid for their book. Now they might not sell more copies. They might not get any residuals, but they've already technically been paid for their book. So that's out there. When you rely on album sales, on streams, on people continuing to buy, to stream, to partake of your music, are you ever worried that putting yourself out there, are you very conscious of that public image and how, if I get too political, if I say the wrong thing, if I piss off this section of the pagan community, I might not be able to eat next month. there's a lot of real complicated discourse right there. So whoever feels brave enough to wade into that one first, you go right on ahead.
I got you. So this is, I have to share this because it's adorable. I think that my husband is more concerned about pissing off Suge fans than I am. He is terrified that he is going to go on a diatribe on the bird site on Twitter and make people mad at me somehow. And I have to remind him, no, because there are adults in my fan base, you know, if they're going to come at me because of something that you said, then they have their own issues to deal with. But I love him and I'm grateful to him for his conscientiousness because our music supports, my music supports us both. My music supports us both. And so it's a very real thought to him that he could say something that would make the money go away. But I don't think it's possible. I don't think it's possible because we are wiser than that. We are not wise in so many ways, but we're working on that. And that also ties in with why you have to say the hard thing sometimes. And if I'm going to lose fans for thing, and for saying Black Lives Matter, and you shouldn't use necessarily that G word that's an ethnic slur anymore. It was easy for me to stop using it. Please consider stop using it yourselves. If people are going to stop giving me their money for that, then maybe I don't want their money. Maybe I don't need their money. I got plenty of people with their heads with their heads on right, or plenty of people that are willing to have their minds changed and their hearts changed that will continue to be part of the experiment that is this career that I've had going for quite a while.
Yeah, part of
if there is something that you could envision me doing that would be so bad that I would become canceled, I want to know what you think it is, because I don't ever want to end up doing that.
No, I just want to piggyback on SJ because I'm completely in alignment with what she's just said. When you do this for a long time, you get to understand your people, because that's your tribe, that's your audience, and pretty much you're pretty much in the same vein with what's right, particularly with Black Lives Matter and social justice, and so it's not really an issue. And if there are people that are really going to flip, and I've had people flip out like that. I've had fans who like the music and they saw my Facebook posts, and then we get into this real debate about something, and then they go away. I'm thinking, okay, he went away. Hey, what are you going to do? But you know, but it's a really small, like one person, one or two people. But in this business, you attract your tribe. You're building your tribe, your people, and we pretty much are all in the same wavelength about this, about stuff.
It's so important. Suge, you will never, ever, ever be canceled.
Agreed. No.
Okay, Ginger Doss has decreed it so.
Let the world It's not going to happen.
Let it go.
All that fear. That fear is a liar. Such a liar.
Liar.
Liar. It's so important to be real, to be who we are as a part of our art. You know, when we write, we can't help but be authentic. I think for the most part, it's coming through in the sound that we make, in the music that we create, and in the stories that we tell through that music. And now that we're all, you know, as a part of just being out there, we have to say what we think about things. I think it's important. I think there's a lot of people that aren't sure how to feel sometimes with all that's going on. And the courage that we have to come forward is so important. And you don't always have to be that courageous. You can stand back and not say what you want to say. But lately, with everything that's been happening, I've really noticed that my heart, my soul says, speak up, it's time, if it was ever time in this world, it's time for us, because I know and I feel in my heart what's right, and that carries me forward. And so, like you said, if somebody's gonna say, oh, well, wow, I didn't know you felt that way, I'm not buying any more of your albums, okay, that's all right. That's really okay. I don't need you to buy my albums. I just needed to say that more than I need you to buy my albums, you know? And
that's it.
There's always going to be people who complain. There's always going to be people that, but we are influencers. We are, you know, and I'd like to think that I will make a difference for the good in this world. And one of the ways I do that is with my music. But now that my face is out there and my words are out there, I'm going to make those matter too, you know, and I want to speak up about those things. And fear is the constant. You've asked us a lot today, Firelight, about our fear, about our worry, about what ifs. And we deal with that every day. And my spiritual practice is all about putting that aside. That does not serve me. That does not help me move forward in my life. It only ever brings me down, and it's real, and I face it, and it's not something I will say is not there. It's always there. But part of my spiritual practice is to every day know and to come into my power instead of my fear. And every time I do that, it's just like you say, Suge, every time I'm about to say no, I know that I can't quit. Like I am mostly a full-time musician. I can't quit. I can't. No, I have pressure from my family. You need to get you should really get a good job that has benefits and blah, blah, blah. Right. And I'm like, I can't do that. Do you want me to die now? Because that's what would happen.
Right.
That's what not what would happen. And so like, so I have to move forward. I have to move forward and keep going as who I am. And I'm getting comments from the gallery here.
Hi, Andrea.
Yeah, Andrea, I've got kids. I've got a family. I've got a mother I take care of. And I have a lot of things, a lot of people who need me. And I want to stay alive and happy and vibrant. And if I was to quit or stop this, I would die. I know I would die. And so,
don't die.
My music and my life, they're not separate. They're one and the same. And I'm just going to always go forward. And being, you know, it feels, I'm so satisfied at the end of the day when I've been courageous. That feels better than hiding. Hiding and saying, I can't say this because what if? Nope. That's not why you're here. That's not why you're here. You're here to be authentically you. That's why you were made. That's why we were made, is to be
what
this.
What if you say this thing and it 100%. Touches someone's life?
Yeah, that's why they give us microphones. That's why we got microphones.
And this is what we came back. This is circling back to the whole concept of the bard. The bard is not just entertainer, but it's shining a light, bringing wisdom to the people, so people can start thinking and asking questions. So Ginger really, you know, and everybody here is really exemplifying that concept that, you know, what if I said it's going to be wrong? Well, that's our job.
Mm-hmm.
That's our job. Yeah. Our job isn't just to make it, it's not pretty. We're going to say what's pretty, say what's ugly. That's our job.
Not jukeboxes. You don't just get to put your coin in and get the song you want, okay? We're not jukeboxes.
Woody Guthrie put it on his guitar. This machine kills fascists.
Right.
it's the gig.
Yes.
If someone doesn't know our values and our beliefs and our politics, all that says to me is that they haven't listened to any of the words that she's written.
Right.
Because it's all in our music. Everything that we believe in comes out in our songs. Some people, and there are some people, there was someone who referred to her Facebook post as hate speech. hate speech, which told us a whole lot about this person.
Yeah, told us way more about them than it ever said about me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And my thought immediately was, well, you're not in our audience then, are you?
Bye-bye.
Pretty much.
And I wish you well, and here's a little balloon.
Here's a balloon. Here's a piece of chocolate.
Here's a little balloon for you. Go away.
I mean, I didn't wish her well.
I think if Renee ever came up to me and said, "Here is a little balloon," and fuck off, I would just die. I would just die. And because Renee has that John Legend voice of just like. Just sounds ridiculously pleasant and just so pleased and just like you're invited into whatever conversation he's having. And it's just like, so if Renee and that beautiful, beautiful just timber just came up to me and said, "Oh, honey, are you having a hard time with this discussion? Here's a little balloon," and kindly fuck off. I would just evanesce. I would turn into sea foam. A sea witch would have cursed me. I would be sea foam. The angels would not save me. I would be dead. I would be dust.
Maybe that would those be the are the end magic words. Like, this is what we say to the trolls from this moment forward.
That's right.
We just channel Renee. Here's a little balloon. Channel the great Renee balloon. Collins.
It's just, it's the balloon that gets me. I just, it's the balloon.
There are a lot of people that need a balloon right now.
Yeah.
Fuck off. Like it's, I'm obsessed. Well, thank you all so much for being here. I did want to give space really quick because for the last year we've been in lockdown. We are still in pseudo lockdown. And so the way in which people are interacting with music, the ways in which people are partaking of music. Now you all are obviously the way that people are buying music really hasn't changed. People are still buying it online, et cetera. But the way that people are finding you has changed because you all are normally used to being able to get out there and go to events and things like that. I did want to give space that as we are opening back up, as we are starting to organize new events, as we are starting to, if anybody out there that's listening happens to be an organizer for a pagan pride or for some kind of pagan music fest or something like that, do you all have any advice or do you all now feel empowered to negotiate, to stand up for yourself a little bit, to maybe not accept some status quo about the ways in which, you know, musicians are expected to show up and play and be quiet and accept whatever conditions you're invited to participate in?
Big time.
Has this experience made you a little bit more of the kind of person to stand up for yourself, to advocate for yourself? Talk to me a little bit about, the ways in which you guys expect or hope or advice for organizers on how to make better events and interact with musicians going forward. SJ, I know you had a lot of thoughts on this.
Big time. And thank y'all for letting me be a bit of a big mouth today. You're very sweet to me. I put this out on Twitter a little while ago, a few days ago, and just in the hopes of coming up with a midway point, because I know that people are anxious to get face to face again, but we're not safe yet. And not everyone even has access to the vaccine yet. And so I'm sitting over here in my entirely safe setup, swimming in privilege, safe in the woods, now with reliable internet, wonder of wonders, thinking, okay, how do I be a responsible community performer? How do I lead by example? Because I know folks are like, oh, I can't wait to have festival again. I can't wait to go to a concert or a restaurant or fill in the blank. And this applies to all sorts of communities, not just our tiny little scene. But I'm already hearing from event organizers who are like, hey, can I bring you out in July? Can I bring you out in October? And part of me is like, no, you may not. Not until guarantee that we will know what is going on. And what if everything gets canceled again and locked down all over again and our hearts get broken anew? And that's not where I'm entirely sitting, because I am a relentless optimist. I will not give up hope on anything ever. That is my bulldog bone right there, is having hope about things, because if somebody doesn't have hope, then everybody else is going to sink. So I'm one of those people that's like, I have to hope and I have to let people see me be hopeful. But at the same time, I don't want to drive cross country when it isn't safe for enough of us to also do that thing. And so I've been sitting with this, and what I put out on Twitter was just the suggestion to those pagan event organizers who really want to get going, but maybe they don't have the budget yet to bring in the musicians that they really, really want to bring, but they also don't want to, you know, upset us by asking for more than we can afford to give. And maybe they're not really sure how they're going to handle where we're at with the pandemic, because it is not over, no matter what a lot of people may really want everybody to be thinking and feeling right now. We are nowhere near done with this thing. And maybe they haven't even thought about what they're going to do with keeping everybody safe and employing social distance measures. They don't even know what that would look like. Maybe the right thing to do is to hire us to work with them on an online benefit show to help you with the budget for next year, when maybe it might be safe for all of us to gather face to face instead of getting in a hurry and setting up an event which might not get to have the level of attendance you wanted to have, might not be as inclusive as it ought to be, because we're still having problems with people even getting access to the vaccine in the first place. Maybe take a step back, adapt the way that we have learned how to adapt in the past several months, and think outside of the box of what you think you're supposed to do as far as having events come back online as quickly as possible. Work together with the musicians that have adapted ourselves and kind of know what we're doing with this kind of stuff. Put together an online benefit show so that the musician gets paid and the organization that wants to put on an event in a future year also gets paid. You get the word out about your event. The audience sees that you're supportive of the musicians in your community at the same time, and you automatically have built a bridge with that musician. So instead of trying to get an in-person event set up when you don't have the budget and it isn't necessarily safe to do so yet, work with the musicians who learned what to do to keep ourselves afloat last year, and we can help organizers of events as well and teach what we have learned to keep everybody afloat, because that's what I want. I want low risk and something that helps everybody. So that's what I have put out there. And I want everybody else that sees that, y'all feel free to run with it. Please, please, please.
Hear, hear. Wisdom right there.
Very much.
Right there. Wisdom right there. Wisdom right there.
Well, folks, thank you all so very, very, very much for spending this time with me here this morning. I celebrate each of you and all of the different ways that you all contribute to your local communities, to the community at large. Ever since I got to, you know, listen to each of you and discover you, I have just been so passionately following your careers and the kinds of contributions that you all make, and the powerful ways in which you all influence community. But I just don't think we ever hear enough from musicians behind the microphone, so to speak, you know, who you guys are, the ways that you all view community when you're not singing at us. So I'm glad that we were able to get this time together. I'm sure that we'll have a follow-up show, because I have a whole list of questions we never even got to. So
can we please have a follow-up show, please?
Yes.
Yes. Let's do. Absolutely.
We'll do a part two.
Absolutely.
We'll do a part two. We will keep all of your contact information in the show notes at incitingariot.com. But thank you all so much for being here. I can't believe that you all got to do this all together, all at once. Best birthday gift ever. Thank you all so much for being here, and you all have a good day.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, rioters, that is going to do it here for us today on Inciting a Pagan Music Riot. I would once again like to thank my guests, Renee Collins, Ginger Doss, SJ Tucker, and Cheshire Moon. All of the ways to find them, their music, are going to be on the show notes on the website at incitingariot.com. If you would like to get in touch with me, you can do so in a number of ways. You can email the show at firelight, that's F-I-R-E-L-Y-T-E, at incitingariot.com. You can connect with me on social media, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok are all at Inciting a Riot, and I am on Facebook at facebook.com/incitingariotpodcast. If you like this show and would like to support it, there are a number of ways to help. Some free ways are consider liking and sharing it on social media. You can also rate the show 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and leave a review. You can also help the show stay free and producing on a regular basis by chipping in whatever you can. If you're able to help financially, you can do things like buy me a coffee, which is a one-time donation of an amount of your choosing, or join my Patreon on a monthly basis. Patrons receive additional audio and video content. In this case, they got about 24 extra minutes of audio and a whole lot of video, as well as archived episodes, a private Discord server, and monthly chats with special guests. Last month was with Velma Nightshade, and I will reveal who will be this month as soon as I figure that out. Links to all of that are in the show notes as well. Remember, you can pre-order my book, The Dabbler's Guide to Witchcraft, wherever books are sold. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. I'm going to leave you, but as always, I will leave you with love and light, firelight.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.